Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Keeping It 1492 podcast. This is Tom. Don't be alarmed. Today, I am doing the intro. Josh had a prior event, and as the old adage said, the show must go on, so it's just me and Kyle here. Another first in Keeping It 1492 podcast history. This is the first two-man set. A couple weeks ago with our friend Nick, we did the first four-man. So now it's just me, Kyle, and our thoughts. So we're going to see how it goes today. We think we have a very interesting subject we both care about. So Kyle, how's it going? How you doing?
I need an adult. Where's Josh?
We're like two children left at the toy store without any supervision. And we don't have our old dad stories or anything. It's going to be interesting.
Yes. I'm doing okay. I just got back from Ithaca. I was camping.
Is it gorgeous?
In Ithaca. It is very gorgeous. Very gorgeous. It's I figured out Ithaca is basically the San Francisco of New York, because there's certain streets you got to pop that e-brake up when you're parking.
I thought you were going to say there's just rainbow flags everywhere in certain parts you go to.
Maybe, but I mean, honestly, like Rochester...
Do they have a Chinatown?
I feel like it's more about that. Not that I knew of. I think I saw one Chinese restaurant, but, you know, I kind of kept to the very white part of town.
So Ithaca is like San Francisco in one facet where you have to use your e-brake on certain hills.
Well, these hills are crazy. Like, have you ever driven through Ithaca? It's like...
I've probably
slept
nightmare. Through it.
Yeah, it's I don't know how you could sleep through it. I don't know how people can ride. I saw people riding their bikes, and maybe when you're in like the downtown where all the buildings are, you can get your bike through. But then as soon as you get where those houses are, right outside town, it's game over. Like you're either gonna like die going up a hill or die going down a hill because you're going too fast.
Okay, that's a compelling story. And the listeners, we do have another big revelation here at Keeping It 1492. Besides this being the first two-man podcast, we have upgraded our technology again. If you're a longtime listener, you know we finally got all the same mics to sound the same. And now we have added pop filters, so hopefully we sound a bit better and you don't hear us popping our peas. That was the first test. We'll see how it goes. Any deep breaths aren't going to be heard anymore. So very excited for this. And Kyle, you ready to dive right into our topic today? Unless you want to take over Josh's role of story time, I don't have any long stories to get into before we... I'm more of, you know, get right into the meat of it. I don't have any compelling story.
I already talked about Ithaca. I don't know what else to talk about.
Yeah, I didn't pre-plan or have any stats for filler stuff in the beginning of this.
So. Is this really going to just, like, turn into the BBC4 spinoff podcast?
I hope your phone's on vibrate and you're not playing... like clips through your phone or anything. I hope we do better than the BBC. That's our goal. Not as good as like Fox podcast, but better than the BBC.
BBC, there's one episode I listened to, and towards the end, like some guy just like showed up and they were like, "Oh, here's this guy. Does everyone want tea or coffee?" that was just part of their podcast.
And they probably don't edit it. They just post it afterwards too. So we're trying to... We may not have a high level of standard, but we're trying for above that.
And we don't have the money for some guy to just show up and bring us tea and coffee.
Honestly, based on the state of our systems and now the pop filters and our mics, I'd argue we might have a classier production than whatever's going on in the basement dungeon of the BBC.
I mean, to be fair, we're talking about the BBC's history and the BBC's philosophy podcasts, which are like two separate podcasts but like the same host and everything.
Do you think that
that probably really is like the dungeon of BBC?
Do you think that podcast has more or less listeners than we get?
I think they have a few more, but it's because the college professors and culture people haven't found us yet.
Your educated types, your brethren, are keeping that podcast afloat.
Yeah, but soon they're all flocked to here. Soon all the laymen will flock, because that's us. We're the bridge between academia and the laymen.
I don't know if we're existential enough for your folk, your ilk.
We're going beyond existentialism.
We're going to see what we do today.
We're going to do the next thing.
And while we're talking about listeners, we do want to give a couple shout-outs. Recently, I was looking into kind of where our downloads are and where we're getting listened to. To the faithful listener that has downloaded all 10 of our episodes, hopefully number 11 by now, in Australia, you are awesome. I texted Kyle and Josh to let them know that we have a very devout follower on the other side of the world. So we hope you keep listening and, hey, maybe pass it on to your friends.
Yeah, get out your old boomerang and boomerang us some more people down in...
Okay, let's not break out stereotypes. We're trying to get more listeners from Australia, not less. Don't piss off the one we got.
Well, that's... You know, we don't have too many Australian stereotypes because I think they're...
They all drink Fosters and play with dingo babies. Or dingoes eat babies. I just ruined that one.
I don't know. But, hey, that's not a knife. This is a knife, which is our podcast.
And also, there is one more listener shout-out to whoever in Cambodia downloaded our episode. If you download another one, if you want to email our Gmail account and just let us know how you found us, I think that'd be a fascinating story that we would all love to hear.
I think these people are in deep academic studies about like American culture or something, and I just want to say you've come to the right place. We are the mouthpiece of American culture. That's our aim. That's our goal.
That's a mouthful. That's saying a lot. That is a big statement.
Don't look no further. Don't try to analyze our flags and symbols or look at speeches.
Yeah,
or,
we covered that in the patriotism
episode.
Or
look at consumerism. Look at our podcast because we are just in the thick of it. We are it's all.
So I think it's time to get into it. I mean, that was some filler. We had a little bit of story time. So today we're talking about something we kind of touched on when we talked about the college episode, which is episode 4, which I figured out, Kyle, that's actually our second most listened to episode now. So the fact really? We keep building up so badly is only leading more people to listening to it. So the majority of you actually have heard this. We kind of touched on wages, unemployment, job prospects, stuff like that. And today we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that. We're just going to focus on one of the topics we talked about. And today we're really just going to focus on employment in America and, you know, a few things associated with that. You excited, Kyle? Ready to talk about the almighty dollar?
Oh, I'm super excited.
Kyle doesn't believe that money should be a currency or we shouldn't be a money economy, so this should be fun, listeners.
No,
he doesn't believe that at all. I'm just putting words in his mouth.
Well, it's a little more complicated, but we'll see.
So the first thing I thought we would get into very briefly is, you know, unemployment. That goes hand in hand with, you know, work. And unemployment is down. It's actually, looking back over the past 10 years, and listeners, I am stats guy, and with there only being two of us, this is going to be a very stats-heavy podcast, at least for me. So for unemployment, we're actually at the lowest we've been since 2007, 2008. So for everything that people may critique about our current president, there probably is some cause and effect with him being in office and unemployment going down from where we were around 10% back in 2010 to now where I think 4.3 was the most recent unemployment number. How do you feel about that, Kyle? Do you think there is a cause and effect with our current president and unemployment? Because I mean, it's gone down every month.
I think it's too soon to say if our current president has had that effect because I think he's still kind of riding on the coattails. Does that make sense? Like he's
what
like
about Obama
kid.
Policies towards work?
Yeah, because it's so soon still. So I think we're still kind of on that trend. And even if there are some increase in jobs, you have to look at I'm sure we're going to touch on this more later, but like, where are those jobs in? Are they?
That's actually what I was going to follow that up with. I was going to, you know, with this just being two of us, I was going to try to keep some sort of like straight line of order to this. So that's actually what I was going to go next. So if you want to get right into that now, we can. Unless you have some more to say.
I mean, some more to say. I think I should touch on, you know, 45, our current president. He's trying to say, I'm going to bring back jobs in the coal industry or basically keep jobs in America that are either disappearing because of new technology or disappearing because the CEOs are choosing to go overseas.
Where it costs less money to make stuff.
Where it does. And I think he might have curtailed a very, very small fraction of that compared to how much people think he might be doing. And yeah, getting back to...
But Wisconsin's getting that one factory.
Isn't it just one?
I haven't kept up on it, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just Wisconsin's getting, I think it's one factory. And it's being talked... Well, how it's being purported is like they're opening hundreds of factories across America.
I mean, that's the problem nowadays is that... Like,
it's like, I don't know how many hundreds of jobs it's going to create.
This news travels that's just totally untrue when if you did a little sniffing around, it's not.
Like, no matter who is president, factories will still open in America. At some place, there will be a factory or a business that opens. That'll still happen.
It will, I guess. Yeah. I mean,
you guess. Do you think
Well, they might be all just robots working there, though, but we'll get to that later. But getting back to the, where are these jobs? What are these jobs in? I don't think people should assume that all these new jobs are in factories, in these good-paying sectors. I think that the rising sector in America today is the service industry, which unions and pays really crappy.
That's what I was getting into. You know, like, are these jobs, and we can get into it later, you know, like, I have a question we can discuss later, but it's like, are these jobs coming up, are they $40,000, $50,000 a year jobs, which, you know, you can live comfortably off of, or are these the $15,000 a year, you know, $9.50, $10 an hour service jobs? Like, you know, like, unemployment has dropped like 4%. It's dropped 4% in four and a half years. But, you know, where's that 4% being made up? Is it, you know, like, what you said, you know, like, we've talked about this, like, the American dream type of job where you can, you know, like, live and have a house and have that crap. Or is it the just getting by jobs that have opened up that people are willing to, say, accept because they can't find other work? You know, where's that 4%, you know, like, I couldn't find anything, you know, where's that 4% actually coming from? And I looked and I couldn't find anything.
I mean, I think it is the service industry. I don't have the data for this. I've been coming to the last few podcasts with hardly any notes at all.
I have like 17 graphs ready to go.
I mean, look at Rochester, right? So, like,
oh, Kodak, we're jumping to that already? I got graphs.
Oh, well, Kodak leaves. What comes up in its place? We see, like, Sutherland, which...
Call center service jobs.
Call center, yep.
Full disclosure, that was my first job out of college. I worked in an Accelerant call center for about 5 months.
I worked there for like
months.
2 days.
I just couldn't handle it personally.
I was one of those revolving door, quick right. overturn people.
Since we're talking about unemployment, a lot of this is going to go towards living and wages and things like that. I found a nice little thing about Rochester, New York State, and United States in general. Just give you the heavy hitters. For example, income per capita in Rochester, New York, as of this is 14. Is $19,100 in the United States. It's $28,500. So just for our city we live in, we're $9,000 behind the median. Household income for Rochester is $30,784. Kyle, do you want to guess what the household income is in the United States?
I'm really bad at numbers.
We're $30,000, and we're, you know, like, we always track the bottom of cities that earn. Do you want to take a stab and guess what the median United States income is and how far, how many thousands we're behind?
I'm going to guess like 42.
You are bad at this. The United States median household income is $53,400. So we are $23,000
below. That's a household. So it's household, like, income. So it's like a man and his wife or domestic partner.
Sort of, yeah. Because there's also family median income, which is what you're referring to. And we're $34,000 at that. The United States is $65,000. So we're actually even further behind for family
that's really
median
bad.
Income.
Yeah.
I mean, to save the listeners all the little things, we are just, with the city we live in, our wages are falling drastically behind. For example, in Rochester, 25% of the population makes under $15,000. The national average is 12.6. We are double that.
That is pretty scary, and
I just thought, I want to look at this for us, like, the city we live in. That's very, very telling of kind of where we are as a city and how the wages and economics of the town or city we live in is. And I'm sorry, this is as 2016, so this is even more recent.
Yeah, that's pretty shocking. I mean, I didn't know it was that bad, and I want to say it's kind of the story for a lot of cities in America that aren't these, like, major growing cities.
Yeah, I'm sure if you looked at comparable cities to us, like, kind of same population, same type of economics, this is probably across the board. Rochester isn't the worst case. I mean, if you look at Buffalo, I'm sure they're as bad as us or right there.
I think they're actually...
maybe worse.
I think slightly. They're actually a notch up.
No. Notch up. Oh, okay.
I remember hearing on the radio, it was last year's economic growth stats for all the cities in America. Can't remember how many cities they're looking at. It was like basically the biggest cities.
Yeah.
And Rochester and Buffalo were, and Syracuse also, were kind of like the bottom of the top 20, 30.
Yeah, and 50. And kind of to point out one last stat on this as we talk more about it. You know, you're talking about a lot of it's service industry, and they do break down a lot of populations by population by occupation. You know, we're kind of talking about service versus other sectors. For example, people that classify as being in management, business, finance, Rochester's just a shade over 5%. Do you know what the national... You want to take a guess what the national averages of a city that works in those sectors is?
I feel like I should stop guessing.
Yeah, it's 14.5%. So we have 10% less of our population in those sectors than normal.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, and you were talking about, you know, like, not per service per se, but, for example, like, in construction, stuff like that, we have 20.5%. The national average is 8%. So there are a lot more people in the construction field. They don't...
Which is kind of weird when you think that we don't and really more, build that much
more,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And more straight service, like fruit, basically restaurants. We have a little under 10%. National average is 5.5%. So we do have about double in this food service industry. That just may mean Rochester has a lot of restaurants.
We do.
So that's, I'll lay off the rest of the stats for Rochester. But I thought the big ones were the median income. And then obviously just the fact that a quarter of our city at least says they make under $15,000 yearly. And this isn't pre-tax or post-tax. This is just yearly a quarter of the people say they make under $15,000. Wow. I thought that's just the most telling.
Well, it's interesting to me, Rochester, because compared to Rochester's past, Rochester started out one of America's first inland boom towns right when the canal, the Erie Canal, crossed the Genesee River. That was like the creation of Rochester, and things were booming. We had flour mills.
And in the year 1878, the Genesee Brewery was created, which is Rochester's oldest brewery.
New York State's oldest brewery. That's
still I'm
going.
Sorry, I take that back. You think I would have drank enough that I would know
it's,
that
it's
off the
right
can?
On the
like,
can. It's
I
right
think
off
I would have
can.
Known that by now. Jeez, that was bad. Sorry, Rochester. I just failed you so bad as Rochester's number one podcast.
It's okay.
I don't know. I'll try to get it back today.
And then, so like going back to like my grandparents' time, you had Kodak. We made the cameras. That was where like everyone worked before this huge layoff that I remember when
I was
in,
we
like,
discussed
seventh
this.
Grade,
it was brand recognition.
Grade,
when people
like
said, you know, I want to take a picture, they, Kodak, like Band-Aid synonymous with band, you know, like, with adhesive. That's what Kodak was like. Hey there, listeners. Sorry for the interruption. Thought we had a bit of a technical difficulty there. My mic was on mute for the past 10 minutes, so I thought we lost the beginning of our show. So we're going to get back to Kyle talking about the glory days of Kodak.
So Kodak, back in the day, was the thing. It was where my parents told me that they didn't even need to go to college because their parents didn't encourage them to go to college. They said, are you stupid? Why would you go to college? Because you can just get a job at Kodak. It's not to say that like they had to get a job at Kodak, but it's like you can get a job at a lot of places, and Kodak is one of those places that hires just about anyone doing something.
Kyle, it's funny why you're speaking that. I had a woman today at work. She's retirement age now, but we were just talking about stuff, and she had said basically Kodak got brought up because that's where she worked and retired from. And she had said as long as you could read and write, when Kodak was booming, you could get a job there. As long as you weren't a complete idiot, you could get a job at Kodak because it was just things were booming so much. Remember we talked about this? They had what 110,000 people at peak time.
We had the stats
so
a few episodes ago.
As long as you could read and write and just do basic human things, you were able to get a job in some capacity at Kodak. And that obviously that option doesn't exist anymore.
Kodak had a nuclear reactor that was only moved out of there maybe like 10 years ago, maybe even less than that.
They were a city unto themselves.
Yeah. They had a nuclear reactor just, you know, small.
Not like Chernobyl.
Yeah, it was a small-sized one, but like a nuclear reactor just to do experiments about like how things move through film. It's crazy.
When you're the number one film company in the world, you can do crazy stuff like that just because you got the money to. Let's build a nuclear reactor and just see how film and nuclear things react and do things.
I mean, my grandpa had stories about some more nefarious Cold War operations going on at Kodak, but that's time for another tale.
We don't speak about that stuff. Doesn't exist. Never happened.
Yes. Yes. Never.
The last episode, the Russians are the bad guys.
It needed to happen if
it had to.
Anything didn't or did happen.
Yeah. So, Kyle, is there something you wanted to bring up? Because I feel like the next thing I'm going to get into is going to be pretty much the rest of the episode where we're going to kind of talk about minimum wage and what do we actually need to live on and kind of where is this whole thing heading. I don't know if there's something you want to bring up before that or if you want to get right into kind of the big thing we're going to focus on with employment and wages in America.
There's one thing I wanted to hit on, and I don't know if it's going to intersect with yours. If we could talk about it for a little bit. It's all right, so automation is a fear I think a lot of workers have, but should it really be a fear? Because think of people like 100 years ago. they're working with machines. They fought, they died in order to get fair wages while working with these machines. Did they think like that was the end of the struggle? I don't think so. I think they imagined a future, and we see this in a lot of like artwork and literature of people in the past projecting about what they think the future is going to look like. They see a world where machines are doing a lot of the work that no one wants to do, while people reap the benefits, you know, doing the things that they want to do, that you can do all these passions that you didn't have time for because you were working. So what I'm getting at is automation like necessarily a bad thing that's taken away people's jobs? And going along with that, will automation lead to a universal basic income? Because I've heard an argument on mainstream news from far-right people, and I know a lot of far-left people are sympathetic to it, of there's just no other option available. You're going to have to give
people... Wait, are you saying those two sides agree on something?
They do.
That can't be. That's not possible.
If you go far enough right and...
Far enough left?
Not even that far left.
Moderate left?
I mean, maybe not even moderate. Probably a little, like a couple notches farther left than moderate, but universal basic income for all. I think the far right people see it as a way to get rid of welfare because you're just giving everyone welfare. So now it's like you don't need to like demonize the people on welfare because, hey, everyone gets it.
Yeah, and I was able to find something real quick because I'm going to throw a stat in here. And I mean, automation's a real thing. I mean, anyone with eyes can tell. It is. We're losing jobs. And fun little thing I just found was it's in current news. China gets a lot of the blame for why we're losing jobs. We did lose between 00 and 10. We lost 5.6 million manufacturing jobs. Like that's clear. It's no arguing that. The part that gets lost is 85% of them were actually lost due to technological change. So
yeah,
as you're saying, automation. So I mean, I just think a universal wage or income is too pie in the sky. I don't think that in America that's going to happen. I mean,
but what's,
you know, we're going to get into
a
minimum wage eventually today.
Yeah.
I just don't think that for corporations, there's too much to risk. I mean, just less people will be hired than there currently are, or less people will make more money. Say the universal minimum was $20. I mean, if that's the case, you're going to want to hire a higher quality of worker, correct? You know, in theory, if you're paying more, you want a higher quality employee, right? Generally. And I think it's going to get to the point where it's either going to get it's going to get even more competitive for less jobs. I don't know. Maybe that's, maybe you're not following me, or maybe I'm not explaining myself how I think I'm explaining myself.
Well, I think the fear, I think you're kind of touching upon like the fear that I would have about a universal basic income, which is that you're still going to try to, basically people are going to get their, you know, monthly few hundred dollars, whatever it's going to be to live off of. And then people aren't going to want just that though. They're going to want to work for more because they're going to see people around them working for more. And those jobs aren't going to be available for everybody. And so, you know,
I mean, it sounds, at least to me, like you said what I was trying to say, I think, a bit more eloquently. If you did that, it has the potential to create a new form of welfare. Yeah, you're working, but if everyone's making the same, it's why I think communism failed. It's when you don't really have an incentive for anyone to try more. If they just know, like, I'm going to be taking care of base needs, I think that has a harmful effect long term.
Well, I'll throw the flip side, though, is that, because I agree with you, like, I don't think that universal basic income should make people stop working.
That's what I'm
thinking.
Like,
I think it should drive them, though. You're going to get your basic needs met, so it should drive you to work towards something that you actually care about.
The non-basic stuff, like a new car or just... Stuff that, or is that part of basic? Would you consider like a part of basic needs? I guess now we're getting into the X's and Y's.
Well,
of what's basic, what isn't.
Yeah.
Well, so we can say that we don't need to go down the road of...
I think it almost requires like a whole cultural shift of values where you're not going to value buying like the material things like a new car so much as you would be, hey, like I really want to become like a painter. And even though I can't make a career out of it, the universal basic income gives me the opportunity to focus on painting, whether I make money off of it or not, or like fund a podcast. Like I could just
we funded a podcast with your credit card and my credit card.
I know, but it's you know, it's tough when we're working.
So
it really puts a shaft in our podcast plans.
Yeah, and so it sounds like what you're getting is, are you hoping that if there was some sort of universal basic income, it would lead to a new renaissance then, where there'd just be more focus on the arts? We've talked about numerous podcasts about how the arts are dying. They're not supported in schools a lot now just because of school funding, and it's very hard to make a living as an artist. Pick your art form. Hey, being a professional podcaster, for example, it's impossible to make a living off doing something you really enjoy in the arts most of the time.
Absolutely, yeah. And to try to make a living, you might have to do some things that you want to do with your art, you know, just to make money.
I work the corner just so I can come down here and do this for an hour during the week.
Yeah.
I trade one sex dungeon for another.
Yeah, Tom goes above and beyond for this podcast.
The things I do.
But, yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's people have to want the right things, and how things currently are in our culture, what we value. I don't think they will. But the flip side to what you're saying, that kind of like, will it lead to people not working to better themselves? The scary thing would be, are we just making people work for work's sake, no matter what the job is?
Yeah, and I was going to get in real quick to touch on it, because you were talking about how the money would be spent. And I was thinking, you know, America, we love our vices. Say basic income, just for the sake of this point I'm trying to make, let's say $35,000. You know, obviously, that'd be, for a lot of people, that'd be a significant pay increase, as in our city alone, a quarter of our city would see $20,000 more dollars a year. What's to say people aren't going to spend that on non-essentials, you know, like casinos, alcohol, you know, pick your poison? What's to say that that's, unless you're going to make it like some sort of government stipend where it can only be used for certain things and that's all tracked electronically, you know, like you can only use, you know, like if you get, is it WIC checks where you can only use it for certain things like milk and stuff like that? I mean, see, like, what I'm getting, like, how would you regulate someone's salary so that you think it's going to lead to betterment?
Well, that would be a how big are you debate
gonna, like,
about it, yeah.
Again, now we're getting into the nuts and bolts.
Yep, that would
like,
be...
You see where I'm getting, though? What's not to lead someone that spent, let's say, $1,000 a year on gambling, have them spend $15,000 because they just saw a $20,000 pay increase?
Well, far-right people would be like, you know, it's their right if they want to waste it, and then it would kind of give them justification to look down on a homeless person, because it's like, man, it's your own damn fault for wasting that government income. But
I just had that thought come across my head as we were talking about, kind of as you're talking about, like, how the money, I'm now thinking like how the money would be spent if in this dream world everyone suddenly, you know, had this injection of cash. And also think about where this would come from is fascinating, with inflation and everything we already have, just thinking about like how we would suddenly get this and what would happen to the American dollar. I don't even want to get into that. There's just, now I'm thinking too real about this happening.
Yeah, we know.
It's making
my
head hurt thinking about how this would actually come to fruition.
There are a lot of nuts and bolts, but I mean, this is a serious thing being proposed. And obviously, I think this level where we're at now, there's going to be some kind of regulations towards it, whether it's, you know, you can't spend your government stipend on lobster and casinos. I don't know, but
does this mean I can suddenly go to Moe's every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Because if I spend $30 a day at Moe's, it's like, whatever, it's my money.
And that's huge debate about it.
I mean, I get a lot of Moe's rewards, though. I get so many free burritos.
Would Moe's even exist, though? Because the workers
they're the greatest restaurant on earth. They will exist through anything.
The workers will be getting a basic income. What's going to compel them to want to work at Moe's? Moe's isn't going to fork out...
My smiley face?
Moe's isn't going to fork out, like, $15 an hour for their employees.
Oh, that kind of gets us to where I think we're going, Kyle. I like your segue. I think that was... That's at least an 8 out of 10 segue.
Thank you.
So, we're going to... We live in New York State, and if you follow the news, you know, the $15 an hour higher minimum wage is really taking shape. You know, there are states like Oregon that already do it. And our great Governor Cuomo, lots of people disagree with that statement.
Wait, is it the whole state of Oregon or just Seattle?
Dude, I'm just trying to throw out general things. I'm trying to, you know, Seattle, give context to everything we're talking about. If any of the...
Seattle's in Washington.
Jesus, man. If any of the 10 listeners want to point out how wrong I'm saying things, great. But you just made it worse
than I
said.
I'm sorry for trolling here. Go on.
So our state is going to this $15 an hour thing. And depending on where you are in the state is where your minimum wage will change. Like, if you're in New York City, it's going to be $15 by 12/31/18. If you live in Long Island or Westchester, it's figured to be $15 by 2021. And the cool thing is, like, upstate New York where we live, pretty much anything outside of Long Island, Westchester, and New York City, it goes on annual increases. We may not hit $15 like where we're from until, like, 2025. Because, for example, at the end of 17, it was 1040, or it's supposed to be. End of 18 is 1110. End of 19 is 1180. End of 20 is 1250. And from there, it's annual increases for the rest of the state until it hits the $15 minimum wage. And they'll be published by the Commissioner of Labor before October 1st, starting in 2021. So, you know, for us, like we've been talking about, you know, like wage and what's livable, that's where we're going to go the rest of the podcast. Where we live, the last raise that's on the books is $12.50 in 2020 as of right now, which is $2.50 less than what downstate will get. Looking at this, I'm like, at least I get the feeling, are we still going to be at this point as upstate New York where people are leaving because they can't make enough to live and, you know, pay bills and do basic things? And I don't know how much you've looked into the minimum wage thing, because I thought it was just $15 is everywhere, like in 2018 or 2019. Holy crap, we could still be a decade away from having $15 in New York State, where we live.
It's one of the shocking things,
like the Rochester underfit, that's the portion this affects. And there's, like, if you're making $12.50 as minimum wage in 2020, you know, like, inflation-wise, what's that going to be? Is that going to be, like, you're still making $7 in 2005?
I mean,
is this $15 an hour thing even going to affect us? Because we're so far behind what they're saying. I get it, New York City's bigger and Long Island. I get there more money, higher cost of living. Yeah. I just see we're dollars and dollars per hour behind them and how this rollout's happening.
I mean, my thing is, like, that is too slow to me. Like, I wish it would happen faster and hurry up to $15 an hour. But the thing is, like, I don't think a lot of us are going to go and move downstate because of that. The cost of living is higher. And then out of state's not going to do these minimum wage hikes for some time, like down south.
Oh, there's some states that still follow the national minimum wage. The national minimum wage, which is set, is it $7.50 or $7.75 still? There's a lot of states where that's their minimum still. Like, we're actually fortunate to live in a state that has a higher minimum wage than the federal one. And I'm going to curse a second. It's effing crazy that in 2016 or in 17, I'm sorry, I almost did. I restrained myself. That federally, they say that someone can live on $7.50 or $7.75 an hour.
Yeah.
And full time is only 32 hours. So the fact they think someone can live on that 32 hours, I don't know who does it. I just want to ask them, like, how do you think that, because I'm sure they make six figures or more with what those people figure this stuff out. Like, how do you think that that's livable?
If you have living parents that you can live at their house at, and if they buy most of the groceries, then yeah.
It's not. A lot of people that do that are the people that probably need the most help, and they're making the least. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, when I saw that there's states that still follow the federal guideline, which is that, I'm like, they still think that and say and try to throw on people's throats that you can live off this?
I mean,
I guess I should feel lucky that we live in a state where minimum wage is like $9.25 or $9.50.
I think most people flee areas like ours to go down south or out west. Out west is doing things more similar to New York, maybe, and more progressive, really.
Where you're going on vacation, North Carolina, that's one of the new big boom areas, like Atlanta. Is it the Charlotte area or North Carolina
Charlotte.
In general?
Charlotte, and I think also
like Raleigh.
Raleigh is also kind of on par with Charlotte. But
you get people going out west, just not California, because California is even more broke than we are.
But I think how it works, though, is that a lot of us get our qualifications up here because we got too many colleges.
You don't even need a master's to teach down south.
No, you don't.
I could go down with my bachelor's.
Teachers do make less, but the point I'm trying to make is that we come down there for specific jobs, whether we have already applied for them or, you know, even already got accepted to these jobs, or we just are qualified for these kind of more high-end jobs in high-demand places. Whereas if you're, like, born there and you're just, then you're still faced with these minimum wage, two minimum wage. You're faced with these areas where they have too little minimum wage, so you're going
to
be struggling.
Yeah, I want to let you flush that out. I saw your brain. You get this look when your brain's working, you're trying to get something out. I saw that look in your eyes, I'm like, I'm just going to let Kyle go.
Yep.
I'm not going to interrupt, just going to let him go.
Sparks were flying.
And I just wanted to point out something real quick. As we're talking about wages, and especially now we're talking about the federal minimum wage versus New York State, we're actually lucky because we get significantly more. I mean, if you look at the numbers, we get like 30% more as minimum wage standards. That's really bad rounding off by me. I'm not a math major, didn't go to school for that. There are still, according to this, there are still 12% of people that work full-time that live in poverty. They don't talk about much for out of the election. That may not seem like a lot, but the fact that 1 out of 10 working Americans full-time is living in poverty is a very sucky thing.
I think it's terrible. I mean, this is getting a little bit off the income question, but not so much, I think.
That was my last graph. I had to burn it somewhere, yeah. So I decided to throw it in here, even though it doesn't relate to what we just talked about
at all.
No,
I think that does, but I think that kind of relates to the welfare question, is that we always like demonize these people who are on welfare, but really I think a lot of people who use it are working these crappy jobs full time, or perhaps, you know, they have like a significant other who is taking care of their kids while meanwhile they're, you know, working full time while she's getting welfare, things like that. You know, I've had coworkers that were in that sort of situation. So we're like demonizing these families that utilize welfare, but really it's like such a fine line, because it's like, are you gonna work so many hours where you like just get over welfare and then you're like starving, or are you gonna have somebody, you know, in your household not work all those hours so then you can actually live and have food for your kids?
I think this is a good time to kind of wrap it up and head into our final little discussion here, is where do we think this is going as far as like just employment and wage in America? I know you brought up the universal income system. Do you think that's a real, like, if you had to decide today, let's say in the next 10 years, do you think anything like that's even remotely feasible? That we're going to get, just as a country, are we even going to get to a better standard of federal minimum wage if it's still at $7.50 now in 2017? Like, by 2027, do you think that the federal minimum wage is even going to see a significant increase?
No, because I think too many people are caught up in the pull yourself up from your own bootstraps type of mentality.
Is that your favorite thing to say? I feel like you say that every podcast.
I feel like I haven't said that much, really.
I heard
a comedian recently who said, you know what, the bootstrap factory is closed. We don't have any more. You can't. Decades ago, that had a lot more validity because there's just more opportunities, more lucrative opportunities now. It used to be you can go to college for whatever, like you can go to college for like feminist historiography and actually like find a job most likely at a college. But now it's like, no, like you just wasted your degree and you people spent, are gonna shit on them. But really, like, I don't think you should shit on people for going for what they're interested in. Because at one time, you could have actually done something with it, but now you can't.
I don't think it's going to change. I don't. I mean, I'll be, if we hit $10 as the federal minimum wage, by then I'll be shocked. Which is sad, because you think things only cost more, but if it's been that low this long, I mean, will even hit, you know, double digits, $10 in 10 years? I think that's a real fear and... Well, fear for me, because I just think about, like, the average American trying to live, and if they live in states that don't adopt these policies, like us, California, and other states that have higher minimum wages, if that's what a certain percentage of the population has to do in the workforce, it could be years and years before they even see $10 an hour.
Well, corporations are too embedded in our values right now, because they have people thinking, like, the reverse of what they should believe. People think that the government is holding corporations back by imposing minimum wages, when the opposite is true. These corporations are paying people much less than they used to, and the government's not doing enough. They need to do more.
Not to interrupt, I know I think I've interrupted you about a dozen times so far. I saw a story, just read it real quickly, that said, based on this, you know, median wage inflation, all that stuff we've already talked about, that 50 years ago, minimum wage was worth way more. Because, like, it's just not adjusting for inflation. It's literally, it was like 1980 minimum wage, like, was $3.80, but that was worth, like, 11 of our dollars. So, like, that's just how much better it was.
And now it's worth what it is. My parents have pointed out, nobody paid minimum wage back then. They always paid above minimum. Like, minimum wage was not the lowest you pay somebody. You always pay them above. Like, even McDonald's isn't... back, you know, like 30 years ago, wasn't paying the bare minimum wage.
And now you see signs that point out we pay 25 cents more than minimum wage. Like, they proudly post that, like, they're in their stores. Burger King would be, like, starting people off at $10 an hour, and then you'll see, like, minimum wage is $9.75. You know, like, that's where we're going. Like, Walmart, if you're going to Walmart, like, the one I go to, they have signs that list all the positions they start, and it's minimum wage, and it's posted, you know, in big letters, like, the $9.75 is in big, bold text.
Congratulations, you're making the least amount legal mandates
that we have to pay you.
And there was a meme thing type of thing going around, and it was like somebody's boss was being kind of condescending. They weren't knowing they were being condescending, but they were like, oh, you're lucky to be making what you make now. When I was your age, I was making $9 an hour at my starting job. But
it was worth more.
Yeah, and then somebody looked up like the inflation of $9 in like 1980, and it's like, you know, like
I pointed out, it was like, yeah, it was like triple actually.
Yeah,
like 380 was worth about 11, so it was,
yeah,
just in terms of what you could buy with that, buying power is what it's called.
Yeah, and plus the cost of living was cheaper, you know, like rents was cheaper, cars were cheaper compared,
things were made here in America. No, I think that's a good place to end it.
Things were made in America.
I think we did pretty well for our first two-man podcast. You know, this is new, it was different. And we had a lot to digest. We talked about a lot today. Thank you again for listening to Keeping It 1492. Please, on Facebook, if you follow us, one of you 22 people that have liked us, please leave us a comment and let us know how the first two-man podcast went. Like usual, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. You can always find us on our website, keepingit1492.com. And we have a new way you can listen to us. Kyle, do you want to let everyone know the new exciting way they can listen to us and view our logo at the same time while listening to us blabber on?
So I don't know if people are familiar with this new platform, but it's called YouTube, and it is pretty special. It's a radical idea where people can post videos of themselves and show anyone they want to on this online format called YouTube.com. Now Keeping It 1492 is on YouTube. So thanks everyone for listening. This podcast was made in America, proudly union made by the only two union members of the Podcast International Union.
And we were not paid minimum wage for this podcast.
We were paid triple that.
Thank you everyone for listening.